Hello, I'm Kimberly Dondo, Digital Content Manager, and welcome to the In Conversation With series, a series where I speak to notable figures in the realm of financial services. Listen as they share their personal journeys, thoughts on the industry, and advice for aspiring advisors. And today I'm joined by Daniel Wiltshire. So Daniel, if you could give us a quick introduction about yourself, that would be great.
Yeah, hi Kim. So I am a financial planner based in Bradford-on-Avon, a little town just outside of Bath. I've been going for about 3 years now. I originally trained for about 15 years as an actuary before deciding to switch across. And so far, I've got no regrets.
Yeah. So you were an actuary for 15 years. What made you take the leap and decide to go over to financial advice?
I think there were a few reasons for the change. I think firstly, being an actuary, it's quite often a very corporate role. So. I was working for big sort of corporates in London, and it was a very different atmosphere. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to do something where I had a bit more autonomy and could work closer to home. So there was a sort of practical aspect to it. I think also it's a very technical role as well, quite narrow, and I wanted to do something where I could work with people a bit more.
Yeah. I mean, that sounds like, I guess before you weren't so much front facing, you didn't get that interaction with people. I find that a lot of people that I speak to who wanted to come into this profession, it's because they wanted that like face-to-face interaction with their clients.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's one of the best parts of the job is that you get to, you know, work with lots of different people and, you know, people from different backgrounds who, you know, perhaps you know, haven't had that much exposure to the world of finance. So it can be really sort of rewarding, not just to you know, help people, but also to help sort of educate them on things that you know, quite often they find very interesting, but it's just not part of their world. So that is a big, I guess, a big part of the reason that I've enjoyed the switch over to financial advice. And I think just more generally, it's just such a varied role. You know, there is a technical aspect to it, of course, but it's also a lot about sort of relationship management and working with people. So it's I've really enjoyed the move.
Yeah. So being an actuary for 15 years, how have you been able to kind of transfer any of the skills that you learned? Obviously, some of the knowledge that you had probably helps, but have you been able to transfer any of that across to now being a financial advisor?
Yeah, I think so. I think some of the technical sort of aspects of the job is naturally helped with the change. I mean, I guess to start with, when I first made the career change, you know, I had to take the exams, and I guess one thing that, you know, being an actuary prepares you for certainly is taking exams. So I guess that felt very you know, it was an easy transition, I guess, for me. And then I guess you know, when I set up by myself, you know, you have to think about investment propositions and things like that, and understanding some of the products that are involved, and obviously being an actuary prepared me really, really well for that. So there definitely was you know, a bit of sort of overlap in terms of the sort of background technical knowledge, but I think probably more than anything, it just gave me the confidence to make the switch, because it, you know, I guess any career change is, it can be quite daunting, and you kind of think, oh, you know, am I going to be able to do this? Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, and there were times like that for me, but I think I just thought to myself, well, you know, I've had all this training, you know, if I, you know, if I can't do it, then, you know, who can? So I think, yeah, I think it just gave me the confidence. I think that was, as much as anything, that was one of the advantages I had.
Yeah, yeah. I think obviously that is very important to have that confidence when you're going into a new role. And so what is your approach when you're talking to clients? I saw something on your page about jargon busting, and I know that jargon is a massive kind of issue within financial services as a whole. People are always trying to figure out a way to make it more palatable for people. So what is your approach when you're speaking to clients and you're trying to cut through the jargon?
Yeah, so I think jargon is something that we, I think, as a session talk about a lot. Everyone says, oh, you know, we don't use jargon, we're straight talking. I'm not sure whether that always happens in practice. I think there's probably a tendency to retreat back into our comfort zone, which does involve jargon, and you know, mm-hmm. that's the way the industry and the profession talks to itself in this sort of quite specific language. And I think sometimes it's easier to express yourself using some of this jargon. And actually, when you get asked awkward questions by clients, it's sometimes easier to sort of obfuscate and not sort of break it down into simple terms. So I think there's a reason why sort of, you know, the tendency to use jargon is sort of stuck around for a bit. So, but yeah, I like anyone sort of try to communicate in a straightforward manner. And I think when I first became a financial advisor, I received so much advice from lots of people. You know, some of it, I guess, with hindsight was good advice. Some of it was bad advice, but I think there was this pressure to communicate in a certain way, mm-hmm. you know, and to the point that some people, and I think they still do, people advocate using scripts and very, you know, specific ways of stepping through a meeting. And I just found it overwhelming. I found it so hard to remember all this stuff, as well as actually being able to connect with someone and have a normal conversation. So after not very long, actually, because I wasn't, as I say, very good at using this approach, I just decided just to be myself and just approach it as a conversation with, you know, somebody that's looking for help. And I think as soon as I started to do that and just be myself and just tackle the meeting, you know, in a way that felt natural, it just, you know, the pressure just fell away and it just became so much easier to engage with people. So yeah, my approach now is very much just to sort of, you know, answer questions and try and get to the bottom of what it is that people, you know, whatever help that people need. And yeah, that's worked much better, and it's just been so much more pleasant to work in that way.
Yeah, I think also it helps with building that long term relationship and connection if they're able to know who the real you is rather than an act that you put on.
I think people feel under quite a bit of pressure, you know, sometimes when they're put in front of clients to project a certain image. And mm-hmm. I think there is a sort of, I don't know what you'd call it, but there is a pressure to be a certain type of person. It still sort of hangs around the profession, and, mm-hmm. and I'm not sure it's really what clients want anymore. Mm-hmm. I think I wrote about it recently, actually. I think people want authenticity more than anything, and I think I think if they can see that you're being sincere and you want to help them, I think that sort of gets you most of the way there, actually. So, you know, like I say, I think some of the advice I had to start with around, you know, elevator pitches and I guess speaking at the clients rather than sort of listening and trying to answer their questions, I think probably is a bit outdated now. So, yeah, that's the approach I'm taking.
Yeah, no, I think that's very positive because, yeah, authenticity is very important. I think me personally, I can tell when someone's like doing a spiel or, you know, just it's not real to them, and developing a relationship, especially when it's someone who's dealing with something as personal as my money, I want to think I can trust that person. So I think I completely understand that. So I'm sure everyone keeps, you know, talking about cost of living crisis, blah, blah, blah. But how has your approach changed with talking to your clients when it comes to that? Are any of your clients coming to you with any concerns and worries? And how, if they are, how are you addressing that? That might be quite a few questions.
Yeah, no, it is a difficult time at the moment, and people are nervous. You know, there's so much in the press. You know, people are, you know, constantly being reminded that, you know, costs are going up, and mm-hmm. there's a lot of negativity around. So I think people are nervous. I've had a few clients get in touch, you know, to ask, you know, what I think about it. And it is difficult because you can't, you know, wave a magic wand and make it go away. It's just the way it is. So I think a lot of the time clients, you know, they just want the comfort of knowing that, you know, they're doing everything they can be doing to mm-hmm. to sort of position themselves in a way that will, you know, hopefully protect them from the worst effects of what's happening at the moment. And I think for most people that is enough, I think. But it is a worrying time. But I think most clients understand that actually there's only so much you could do, and that is just the way it is at the moment. You just got to hope that things get better.
Yeah. So is your approach just to kind of advise as normally and just allow them that space to figure it out?
I think so. I mean, I think it is natural, I guess, to sort of reassess what you already have in place. And hopefully, if, you know, you got the advice right in the first place, you know, people should be sort of positioned appropriately. Fortunately, most of my clients, I don't think there's, you know, this has made me sort of think, oh, actually, perhaps, you know, we need to change the way, you know, that things are done. It's more just a case of sort of providing comfort and sort of, you know, explaining to them that, you know, they are positioned in a certain way, and, you know, we're, you know, looking over the medium term and that sort of thing. So that I haven't made any big sort of short-term changes. And I suspect that's the way that most advisors would approach it. Of course, if, you know, you get a client who calls up and sort of decides that actually, you know, they really are concerned and they want to change things, then I guess you have to have a conversation about that. But I think most of the time it's about just explaining to clients or reminding them that you know, quite often financial advice, or most of the time, it is a more medium term thing. So hopefully, I think, you know, it's hard to know what will happen, but I think, you know, people do still expect things to, you know, in the next couple of years sort of stabilize and return to normal. So I think it's just a case of sort of, you know, just continuing to monitor things and make changes if you need to. So yeah, no sort of major sort of overhauls or big changes or anything like that. I mean, that's not the way I manage things, and I think that's probably true of most advisors.
Yeah. No, that I think that makes sense. So as someone who's been in the industry for 3 years, what are your thoughts on the industry currently, and where do you see it progressing or going? Do you see any major changes, or do you think, you know, it's just going to keep moving the way it has been?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question. I guess there's been a lot of changes. I mean, that's mm-hmm. my perception anyway. Yeah. You know, certainly over the last 10 years, obviously the impact of RDR, mm-hmm. And the switch from, you know, a commission-based sort of system into a fee-based system. And I think that has had, you know, a profound effect really on everything. And I think it has gradually over time led to a shift away from a sort of sales-driven approach to financial advice to a more sort of consultative approach. Mm-hmm. I think mission, you know, when you take that away, I think it does have a sort of broader effect on the way that people go about their business and they conduct business. So I think there has been a big shift over time. I expect that to continue. You know, there's still a lot of discussion and hand wringing around, you know, fees and how people charge and transparency, and that will, you know, I can't see that changing. So, I guess, yeah, I would expect the shift to a more consultative type way of providing advice will continue. Mm-hmm. I guess there's, you know, again, there's a lot of discussions around the advice gap and the lack of advisors coming into the industry and the aging sort of demographic of the current advisors. I guess that it's going to be interesting what happens in that space. I know there are academies now and there's a big effort to get younger advisors in. Mm-hmm. It is quite difficult though. I think advice, I mean, again, this is something that I've felt. I think people naturally feel more comfortable speaking to people that are a bit older. Right. The perception is that they have you know, a bit more experience. So I think there is an element of that. So I don't know whether I don't know whether that will change you know, drastically, but we'll see. The advice gap's a really difficult one, and again, I don't quite know what the answer to it is. Potentially robo advisors, maybe that'll continue. You know, it's something mm-hmm. I think about occasionally, you know, whether or not they will potentially, you know, take more market share. I'm not sure. They don't seem to have had a huge amount of success really beyond the sort of, I guess, the sort of lower end, or people that would, you know, probably wouldn't seek advice anyway, you know, DIY investors. So I don't know. I mean, it's really interesting. I guess there will be technological innovation. I think there will be a continued shift towards transparency. And as I say, this more consultative type approach to the financial advice. But I would think in the sort of short to medium term, I think things will continue as they are.
No, I and also when you were talking about the need for younger advisors to come into the profession, do you have any ideas on, or any, you know, a lot of different people are weighing in and giving their thoughts on how to, you know, attract new talent. What would you say as someone who, you know, when you left university, you probably weren't aware of financial advice, I'm guessing. So what would you think is necessary to make it a viable option for school leavers?
Yeah, I think what would help? I think, I'm not sure really. I think it's down to employers to provide the opportunities, I think. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I guess there is probably a bit more awareness now, certainly within the profession and the industry around, mm-hmm. You know, paraplanning is a sort of profession in itself, and the various different roles that sort of sit behind these advice businesses. So I think things are moving in the right direction. I think one of the things that I think could be improved, and again, I don't know whether this is more of a cultural thing, perhaps, I'm not sure, is, I think just giving people younger advisors or paraplanners the opportunity to join in with client meetings. I think, again, I have this perception that a lot of advisors sort of guard their clients quite jealously, and, you know, mm-hmm. They're quite reluctant to get other people involved in that relationship. And I guess part of that is because, you know, maybe they don't feel it's appropriate to have other people sitting in on those meetings. But I think it would really help if there are opportunities to get people involved in the relationship side earlier on in their careers. I think it would really help with development, and I think it would really help you know, bring people through a little bit, you know, more quickly, you know, because again, something I hear about quite a lot is people, you know, they go, you know, through the various stages, they take their exams, they get some good experience doing sort of back office type jobs and power planning, but there seems to be a bit of a barrier to actually getting in front of clients and sitting in front of clients. And I don't know whether, like I say, maybe it's to do with, you know, maybe being a bit older and sort of having the sort of personal credibility to sit in those meetings, I'm not sure. But I think some of the perhaps the bigger employers, if they, I don't know, if they could be a bit more generous and get people in front of clients earlier, I think that would help.
Yeah. No, I think those are all very valid points. So finally, Daniel, I want you to shed some light, shed some advice to any future advisors or anyone who is currently, you know, going through their, getting all their qualifications. What advice would you give them to get to where you are now?
I think it's a brilliant profession. I really do. I think, like I say, I think it's worth it. It's worth the effort. I can remember when I was sort of thinking of moving across, there just seemed like there were so many things, so many hurdles to get over before you could actually, be an advisor. But the first thing I'd say is it really is worth it. I think it's a great profession, really varied, and there's so many opportunities. So that's the first thing. It's definitely worth it. The advice I'd give is, I guess, you know, as I said earlier, I think once you've got through the exams, which is, you know, I guess quite a big thing in itself, but you will get through them, keep chipping away, and you'll get there. But once you've done that, just really to be yourself, you know, try not to, put too much pressure on yourself to be what you think you might have to be. You know, like I say, there's this kind of fairly dated sort of idea, I think, that still hangs around the profession, around what an advisor is, I think. Mm-hmm. You know, but I think there are so many different types of clients, and I think, you know, there are different types of advisor, I think, that can service these different types of people. So just be yourself, and really just sort of have confidence in yourself as well, and don't sort of worry too much about what others may think. And I think have confidence in yourself, and I think it's worth it.
Yeah. Well, that is also just great general life advice anyway. Yeah. I think I'll take that on board. But yeah, thank you so much for speaking with me today, Daniel. I really enjoyed the conversation.
Yeah, no, thanks, Kim. No, it's great.
Thank you for listening to In Conversation With. We do hope that you enjoyed it. Please do keep up to date with all our new releases via Podbean, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and everywhere else you get your podcasts from. You can also keep up to date with all our new content published on the Money Marketing website, as well as our print edition Money Marketing magazine. So make sure to subscribe. Follow us on Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook, and Instagram. See you next time.